I think I'm having a moment. Another moment to relapse, so serotonin. But I see it from your side. I can't count it on my fingers. All the times you let me down. Say your peace and let it linger. Let the words dry out your mouth. I can feel the emotion when I walk into the room and you got me in focus.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, joined by co-host El Jefe.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? How are you today?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking.
Great. It's spooky month. Did you notice? You looked outside today and you noticed the leaves had turned, which they don't ever do in our state, and the weather has cooled, which it never does in our state.
Also correct.
But it's spooky season.
It is spooky season. But before we get into what the theme is this month, because it's a new month, but it's a new month, which means just blah, 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 which means it's a new musical guest here on the podcast. And this month of October, in a year of our Lord 2023, we got the band, the pop punk band from Chicago, Illinois, Fluorescence, with their song. Roll the dice.
It's going to be a rough month, I'm thinking. I don't know.
The Chicago, Illinois band Fluorescence with Roll the Dice. They're doing big things. I, again, found these dudes on TikTok about a month or so ago, I think. And started listening to stuff, and at first I was like, man, I don't know if I'm feeling it. Then they released this this new song, which Roll the Dice is, I guess, their first song off of a self-titled EP. But it's really good. I dig them. Be sure to hit the show notes where you can catch all the links of their social media accounts. They're doing a big thing, so make sure you give them a like, a follow, and a subscribe, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Please save us. What is the theme this month?
This month's theme is creature feature. A movie featuring a creature. Now, Mark has decided that in his selection, he's picking The Shape of Water from 2017, a Oscar winner.
It is a Oscar winner, 2018 Best Picture winner. It actually won a lot of awards, but
yeah,
that's the biggest one.
Runs for 2 hours and 3 minutes. It's directed by Guillermo del Toro, written by Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor, starring Sally Hawkins, Octavia Spencer, and Michael Shannon. Listed in that is Doug Jones, who played Abe Sabian in Guillermo del Toro's other work, Hellboy, as well as Richard Jenkins, who was unrecognizable in his role in Bone Tomahawk. If you remember back.
Was he unrecognizable?
I didn't recognize him.
He just looked like an old man.
Listen, I didn't recognize him.
I got it. I get it. It's fine. Jeff, what's your relationship with The Shape of Water here? Have you seen it before?
I had not. I know it won. It was sort of the Oscar darling in the year it came out. And I think in a lot of ways that kept me from watching it. Although I would consider myself a fan of Guillermo del Toro's work. But the idea of a fish romance was not getting me into the theater. It didn't get me to rent it, and it didn't get me to sit down and watch it when it was free. And I think the only way I was going to watch this film was if you selected it for this podcast, or we did Guillermo del Toro chronologically. So,
which should probably be on your list.
It is.
Guillermo del Toro.
It very much is. Like I said, I'm a fan of his work. I really love Pan's Labyrinth. I say I'm a fan of his work, but that's really about the only thing I actually love of his, to be honest.
He is a visually striking filmmaker, right? All of his stuff is very, vibrant color-wise, even like here in this movie, where a lot of it is like kind of dull and gray. There's just color mixed in everywhere. It's just a vibrant filmmaker. But so I remember I saw this the year that it came out, because I'm a big I like watching Oscar movies. I like staying on top of what is supposed to be a Oscar contender. And so I remember watching this when it came out. I didn't go see it in theaters, but I believe I rented it, probably on Prime or something when it was available. But and I remember not particularly enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And I really couldn't figure out why everybody loved it the way they did. It's fine to me. It's a fine film, and the creature here is very creature-y. I don't know how to.
I think it is a creature, and therefore this is a feature. If we're going to argue whether you hit the theme, I suppose so. I kind of hoped, since we were in the month of October, you would shoot for a little more horror, but you know, to each their own. A creature feature is up for interpretation, and that's fine.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and I thought going into this second viewing, because I'll be honest with you, there's a large portion of this movie that I did not remember.
I can tell you the part you do remember.
we'll get to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still to this day, and I watched it early on in the week. I still don't know why this got so much love. I mean, it was nominated for like 8 Academy Awards, won like 5 of them.
So I'll say this: I'm kind of surprised that this was an Oscar darling, because it's Guillermo del Toro for one. And then, of course, Pinocchio Pinocchio had won an Oscar later, but this is I would watch this.
Pinocchio is like, a better film than this.
And you asked me whether I think it would be nominated for Oscar. I would say no, not because of the quality, but because of it being this genre film. Kind of being weird, kind of being funny, not funny, kind of being fairy tale like his tone.
Yeah,
there's a show I talk about a lot on Chronologically called Pushing Daisies, where everything has this fairy tale feel to it. And this is a darker film visually than that show was, but it has that fairy tale feel, like the costumes that they wear, and it's set in the 50s ish. 1960s is what this says, and the clothing and the outfits all look that way when they're outside of the facility. It's very bright and colorful. Like when our antagonist goes home to his wife, it's a very colorful house. She's dressed colorfully. It is unmistakably, had I watched this blind, I would immediately peg it as a Guillermo del Toro film though.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's interesting how he, no matter what the setting is, Hellboy was the same way. No matter the type of film, he puts his mark on it.
He's a Tim Burton style director where he has a visual language that you can immediately see. Is that good? You know, I think in Guillermo del Toro's case, he hasn't done it so much where it feels worn out, like where Burton, his visual style, it got to the point where it was like, all right, you've done this a lot. We've seen this.
Right.
I didn't feel that way watching this. I still found it very visually appealing.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I don't know what's so great about this. You didn't like this?
No, it's not that I didn't like it. It's because Sally Hawkins is really good in it. you know, she plays a mute woman, and she gets naked an awfully lot in this movie, which is a bit an interesting call, is because she's not some, you know, knockout, you know.
Oh, here he goes. Here he goes.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's interesting. And but like the character, I guess, because Sally Hawkins, you look at her, like you Google Sally Hawkins and she's an attractive lady. But here in this movie, she's a very ordinary, I guess, would be the right term.
You would say that.
Woman. But I there is things about this movie that make me it makes it feel like it's maybe almost like a summer blockbuster of sorts. And nothing really made me feel like, hey, this is the best picture of the year. Is because, and I put it up against another movie that came out that year that was an Oscar contender, The Three Billboards of Something Missouri.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that movie, and I've seen that movie once, but I watched it the same year it came out, 2018, and it was really good. And I remember watching that movie and at the end of it going, that's the best film of the year.
So here's a question. That being the case, having seen this movie and being not quite as impressed as people said, why the hell did you pick it for us to watch on the show?
Because it had been a while since I'd seen it. And two, I remember not being that impressed with it, but being impressed with the visuals. And I honestly wanted your perspective on it, because sometimes you can talk me into things. Like, you can talk me into liking a movie, or you can talk me out of liking a movie.
It does happen once in a while. I would say go back and listen to Basic Instinct, where I actually pull a 180 that episode, I think, because you're like, oh, well, I don't know. I'm like, bro, this shit was amazing. You're like, yeah, it was. I recommend it. So I'm not going to talk you out of not being impressed, because I am kind of in the same place. I think visually it's great. I think the acting is superb across the board. There isn't one really false performance. I think, like you said, Sally Hawkins is really great. Must be nice to be in a movie where you don't have to memorize your lines. Octavia Spencer is wonderfully likable. Doug Jones as the amphibian is kind of doing his Andy Serkis thing. And Michael Shannon is properly intimidating, which he always is, because he has a resting asshole face. And Richard Jenkins is great. So all of those things are all positive. And what it breaks down to for me is fish sex. I like, that's the part that I can't get past. And it's, and I think the movie could have maybe brought me along, but it didn't. And the reason being is because, yeah, they're saying there's these weird communications, but that fish thing is having a biological reaction to her. And I just, there's something about that where I'm like, it feels wrong, right? Like, this is a different species. And to me, an animal still, because sure, it knows sign language, but there are other, animals in the world that can learn sign language, right? What if in ET someone hooks up with ET? It would just feel weird, you know. It just is like, that doesn't work for me, you know. And it's supposed to be this love story, and because it's supposed to be, and it doesn't work, there's no dialogue between them. She has this thing where she feels similar, like a kindred spirit to it, between that she talks to Richard Jenkins about. And I just can't buy it. And unfortunately, that's the crux of what the movie is weighing on for it to affect me emotionally, is for me to buy the relationship. So when the finale happens, I'm supposed to have an emotional reaction, and I don't, because she shouldn't be fucking the fish, is what it comes down to. It's regardless of, you know, what amount of intelligence it may have, it's also not something you can perfectly communicate with. And so what if you've you know, psychologically fucked up this fish because now it's going to go home and said I had sex with a scaleless woman. I don't know. It's just weird. And I, that's why I can't get past it and why it lacks the emotional punch that I think it should have if it's going to be nominated for Best Picture of the Year. Sure, it's beautiful. It looks great. Hellboy is beautiful and looks great and is well acted all the way through. But nobody thinks that that's an Oscar film, right? And part of it is because it's based on a comic book and the Oscars are bullshit anyway. But no one would argue that's the best movie that year. And I don't think the positives here are enough for me to put it over the top and say it's the best movie of the year. And when I was done watching it, I was kind of like, okay, that was okay. Like, I can't really, I agree with you. I can't understand why this was so beloved by film critics and experts or whatever, because it just, did they not see her have sex with the fish?
The lady floods her apartment in order
that
to
was
have sex
so
with the fish.
Crazy. I would have been so pissed. Richard Jenkins is such a nice guy in this, because if I'm in their
the
apartment,
thing kills his cat.
It eats
rips
his cat.
The cat's yeah.
Which is
and he's
kind
like,
of interesting.
Whoa, it's just an animal.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what I mean, right? Is like this thing isn't fully acclimatized to human culture. And it isn't by the end of the film, right? It's because there's only a limited amount of time to help this thing learn. And it's eating cats, right? But it knows enough to know that he should have hair on top of his head and he heals Richard Jenkins' baldness, which is weird. I can't with this movie. I honestly think the problem is the premise is not done well enough for me to buy it. I don't believe their romance. And that's it.
I think for me, the film is missing that even like Richard Jenkins, I guess Del Toro is attempting to create this character that Richard Jenkins is playing as this apprehensive person, right? This, hey, what are you doing? Hey, why are you doing this? Hey, this is not smart. Hey, let's think about this. But he never comes across as somebody that is believable in that depiction, because at every turn,
weirdly all in later.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that there's never a moment in the film where the fish has to win Richard Jenkins over. And the fish just kind of goes out of its way to show Richard Jenkins that, hey, I'm a good guy. I like this lady.
I eat cats.
I just think that's kind of what's missing for me from this film is that there isn't that moment where the cards are stacked against the fish or Sally Hawkins' character or even Richard Jenkins and the fish has to do something to win over these characters. Automatically, Sally Hawkins is kind of just love at first sight with this fish. There isn't any courtship or romance. And it's just...
What do you mean? The whole egg thing? She brought him eggs?
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You know,
okay.
That would do it for me. I boiled you some eggs. She peeled it too. Now that honestly is something that works for me because I hate peeling those.
Peeling eggs is terrible.
Yes. I think that's the thing is I feel like there's other movies where there is a language barrier and they're still able to portray love. I'm trying to think there was in Love Actually, isn't there a character who is doing sign language and the other person can't read him, but I don't remember, but like this whole idea of people falling in love with a language barrier is not new. It's been done before, but it's never been done with the fish. So I will say one of the things this movie does have is a theme that runs throughout, and it's about feeling out of place in the world. So obviously the fish is quite literally at times a fish out of water.
Right.
Sally Hawkins plays a mute woman who feels, you know, cut off from the world because she is so different. Richard Jenkins plays a gay man, and this is, again, is in the 60s where that's definitely not going to be accepted. Octavia Spencer is a black woman. So right. She has sort of the double, if you'll excuse me, and I don't mean this in any other way, but essentially like a double whammy of you have to deal with being black in America in the 60s and a woman. And right. She faces a lot of sexism, a lot of racism in this film. And it's shown, it kind of reminds you of those times. And so these characters are all sort of feeling not at home in this world. And I think that that's at least the theme I could glean out of it. The movie didn't have to tell me that. I was able to pick it up on my own, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy a film that doesn't have to explain every fucking thing to you, that can show you and not tell you. But I just, there's just things here that I'm like, why? I mean, I don't need to see her flooding her apartment to essentially destroying a whole fucking building to have sex
so
with this fish man.
Unbelievable.
Like, I mean, these dudes are trying to enjoy a movie downstairs. What
and that guy
fuck?
Got nasty, went through the ceiling bathwater in his mouth.
He got fish jizz water in his mouth.
Yeah, he did.
All right.
And what was the hand motion she makes where it opens up like a garage and out comes? And then her friend is right. Just like, she's can't like, trust men. She's not even weirded out by the this
I'm
lady's
doing it on the camera.
Right.
It comes out like this.
Yes. See what Mark's doing. Yeah. I found that unbelievable. I'm expecting her friend, because if I'm in this world, even if I see the fish man and I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. And I understand, hey, we need to get fish man out of here. And he is sentient and a unique creature, and we do need to save him. I'm all on board with all of that. And we get him back to your house, and the next day I find out you've been hooking up with it. I got problems. You know, that just, in no world is that good. I don't, I can't, and maybe someone else can just suspend their disbelief, and normally I can. But this is a bridge too far. Like, what if at the end of Free Willy, you get to have sex with Willy? That's what this is. And it just, I just can't get behind it, you know? Like, because you and I are pet owners, right? You pet your cat, you feel like you have some sort of connection with them emotionally. But at the end of the day, they're a cat or a dog in your case. And there is still a huge chasm emotionally and intelligently between the both of you, even if they're of equal intelligence like Fishman is. And it just, I can't get past it. And it's what I think ruined the movie for me, because if you take that element out and, you know, she finds a friend in him, then maybe that works and you can still have him. Then it becomes E.T. at that point, and I'm okay with it. You know, like, oh, my friend's leaving. This, I don't want you to go. You're my friend. You mean a lot to me. I'm fine with it, right? But it just, like I said, if Elliot were to bang E.T., it would change the entire film and just make it sort of fucked. And I think that's what this is, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's an interesting. There's probably a corner of the internet there somewhere.
I'm sure you found
that. I haven't looked, but I do think that, I did enjoy that there is a classic villain in this film.
Oh, how good is Michael Shannon? He's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he is a villain all the way through. There's not a moment in time where we are meant to sympathize with Michael Shannon's character. And I enjoyed that. It's because he's very, It's very black and white. You know where you fall with Michael Shannon.
Man, my favorite thing about his character arc was when he gets his fingers reattached and they're just decaying throughout the film. Yeah. I loved that piece. It was just like, and I'm sure there's like allegory there for the, you know, his heart sort of decaying at the same time and him becoming more and more evil. But he's a torturer. He tortures this creature. He's sexist and racist. And I think if given the opportunity, would have been a rapist in this film. He just kind of is this terrible person all the way through. Right. And yet he's able to have a character arc where he doesn't get better. He just gets worse. And I still think that's a valid character arc, especially in a villain. And I don't know, I'm sure other films have done it, but one thing that is kind of unique about this to me is that that's there, that he does kind of get worse and worse as time goes on.
Yeah. And you know, he works for the government, and this is a very Cold War movie. And so, you know, they're worried about the Russians and you know, what Cal can, and that's another arc in this movie that I don't think needed to be there, but it was interesting nonetheless.
I kind of like the Russian arc because it does sort of show like governments as the problem, right? Because in this movie, it's kind of the U.S. government, but the Russians are kind of doing the same thing, right? And their scientist who they have undercover in this operation, he kind of takes a more morally correct approach to things.
And he defects of sorts and
he
gives over the creature.
Right. He sort of says, hey, I'm recognizing that what we're doing is wrong and I'm going to do the right thing. And he also doesn't try to have sex with the fish, which I'm on board with. But he's coming at it from a science point of view, and he recognizes that this species is quite intelligent and needs to be treated as such, and definitely wants to save the fish's life. So I like that character. I like his arc. I like his whole story. My only problem is at the end of the film when he's being tortured, he gives up his conspirators.
Right.
And he doesn't need to, right? So he's been shot. The guy even tells him, you're dying. You're dead. Basically, where you've been shot, you're dead already. So you might as well tell me it's not going to make a difference. Well, here I am thinking, if I'm dead already, what does it matter? You don't need to know. I'm going to die either way. And two, this guy is convinced that it was a huge team that broke the fish out. So why not lean into that? Why not be like, yeah, it was Comrade Veletnikov and Comrade blah, 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 and just make some shit up. You're going to be dead in a few minutes. So go with that. And it just kind of felt like, why would you give up these two people who helped save the fish, who you are both like-minded of, when you're going to die anyway, and you could have just lied? Because there's a limited amount of time that he could torture you. So even if he thought you were lying, he wouldn't be able to ignore the fact that he better get to work because they're all on this 48-hour timeline or whatever that they mentioned in the movie. I just was like, that's bullshit. I hated that the character did that. It didn't make any sense to me, and it actually felt like a betrayal.
Yeah, and the motivation for him up to that point was very sound. I mean, we're on board. We're like, okay, he wants to save this creature. So he recognizes it's got a bond with this lady. And so, yeah, let's send it. And then at the end, like you said, it's just like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, I wish there were enough breadcrumbs there. He could have figured out by sitting in the thing and seeing a video of something that clues him in, right? You didn't need this to happen. Although I did like the scene where he gets shot and then the other guys get shot by Michael Shannon. I thought I liked that scene because I didn't see it coming. You know, I found that enjoyable, but then it just kind of fell apart when he turned him in for, like, you had so much. The guy is telling you, tell me the names and ranks of this team that came in.
Yeah, he doesn't know. Like,
just say some Russian names.
Right.
Just be like, yeah, like I said, just phone it. Anyway.
Yeah, it's. I mean, ultimately, it's. The movie, in my opinion, is fine. It just, I did not think it was an overly great film.
Right, I agree.
And the unfair
it's
expectation
an old
Pan's of
this film. Labyrinth.
Correct. Yes, 100%. If we're comparing Del Toro films, it is not Pan's Labyrinth was, I think, nominated for an Academy Award, but. I don't think it was nominated for Best Picture. I don't know.
Was it maybe a foreign film? Because I know it was in Spanish, but I don't follow it like you do. So,
yeah, it's Pan's Labyrinth, 2006. So it's it won 3. So maybe it was nominated for Best Picture. But I mean, if we're comparing the better films, no, it was not. It was so the nominations it received in 2006 were Best Writing, Original Screenplay, Best Achievement in Cinematography, and Best Achievement in Art Direction.
Oh. Well, regardless.
This is, Pan's Labyrinth is a much better film.
Like, at the end of that movie, I was feeling it, you know? Like, I just was like, oh, man. Like, it hit me in the gut.
Yeah, you're emotionally tired.
This was like... This is like the whole time after having, like, I would even say up until Fish Sex, I'm kind of enjoying it. I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. I like
it's kind
world.
Of a whimsical film.
It feels like a fairy tale. And then right. Like the moments of violence are kind of surprising. Yeah. You almost forget that the movie's rated R at points, despite the nudity. But it almost feels like it's, the way the film is made is like it's not rated R, and so when the violence pops in, it actually becomes more shocking. You're like, oh, this is not holding back. So and you can hear there's a lot of positives, but she fucked that fish, bro. She had sex with that fish, and that's where the crux of the film breaks down for me.
Because the rest of the movie,
I'm like, but she, and then they have the song, right? You know, they're at the dinner table and she's having to set the fish free, and she doesn't say a word the whole movie, but then she starts singing in her own mind. Yeah. Like, you get the idea this is her own fantasy, which is fine. You know, it honestly wasn't the worst part, but I just can't.
At times, it does feel like a fairy tale, and I wish that had been the entire film, right? I wish it had been more Pan's Labyrinth, where it is a fairy tale in this kid's mind, and she's just making all this shit up is because her fucking world is falling apart around her.
Right.
And I wish that had been this film, but in a grown-up's mind. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe it like, is. Maybe, but it's, I mean, it's not though, right? Because everyone else sees it. Like, the whole thing about Pan's Labyrinth is you're not really sure what's real and what's not. And I think even, I mean, you sound convinced that you think that she was all in her mind, but I think the movie allows you to go either way at the end of Pan's Labyrinth. Like, if you want to choose to believe that there's hope and goodness, then you would say, you know, she probably wasn't dreaming this and everything's great. But, yeah, this just...
But see, the difference between Pan's Labyrinth and Shape of Water is that Pan's Labyrinth, it was an earned question, right?
We got to stop using that word. I said it like 3 weeks ago, and we say it all the time now.
What, earned?
Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah.
Did you subconsciously plant something?
I did. I pulled an inspection or whatever that movie is. Inception.
Yes. Inception. Okay. But I mean, it's still true regardless of the word you use.
I don't mean to make yourself conscious.
It's still that movie got to where it ended earnestly. And here I feel like the movie kind of moves its way through the film by just being like this kind of weirdness. And Guillermo del Toro is, I mean, he's no stranger to weirdness, but he also I like is his weirdness. He can
like
right he can tell a good story, he tells a good story through the weirdness, and I just don't quite think that this was the story that really needed to be told. I don't know.
What part would you say really threw you off?
It's where they're having key lime pie.
Yeah.
That's fucking
that key
weird.
Lime pie looked horrible. It looked like right, lime looked like jello shit. In a pie crust. What was that? Like this. So there's this subplot where Richard Jenkins, again, you're not outright told, but you gather through everything in the context clues that he's a gay man and he kind of has the hots for this guy that runs the pie place. Apparently the pie is shitty and they've got a fridge full of uneaten slices. But then he goes in and after a lot of testing the water makes a move, and then the guy flips out and he's, then some black people come in and the guy is racist to them. He's like, don't treat them like that. And he's like, you need to go too. And it just kind of really, that sets the time frame you're in, right? So not only is him being gay not accepted, but black people being allowed in this establishment is not accepted. So, and at that point, the guy's like, I've got no one, because the one guy I had these hots for, not only is he not gay, but he's a horrible person. And that kind of just is it for Richard Jenkins on that regard. And he's sort of, again, feeling like an alien in this world is forced to essentially abstain from any sort of sexual relationship with someone that he likes. So it's a tale of loneliness in a lot of ways, but the whole
film is a tale of loneliness, right?
Yeah, but they have friends, right? Like Richard Jenkins has this friend whom
Sally
he
Hawkins.
Loves, and Sally Hawkins, and vice versa.
Right.
I even like, and again, the movie doesn't really tell you till later, but at the beginning, I'm like, is that her dad?
Right.
But then you kind of
does he like her?
Well, you don't ever get that. Like, I never felt that there was any sexual thing. I felt very fatherly until I realized that they were best friends.
I at the end of the day, I don't think in no way is this a bad film, right?
But is it a good film? These are the questions. Right?
My expectation for this film going in, knowing it was a Best Picture winner, right? Certainly elevates the expectation. You almost have to when you are watching a film that won 5 or 6 Academy Awards, was nominated for 8, and is directed by a highly regarded director, and you are expecting, especially if you've seen any of his previous works, you expect this kind of level of greatness from Guillermo del Toro as far as the visual storytelling goes. And the only real visual storytelling he does is through the sets. Even though the creature is very well designed, we just don't ever see anything other than the creature healing, things by lighting his body lights up. There's nothing really remarkable about what this creature does or is doing or is,
Well, he heals himself and heals others.
Right. But, that's kind of the thing. And the sets here are very much are awesome. I'm like, I didn't come here for the sets. I came here for the creatures. And I got one creature and it's fine. But I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't know, man. It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie, but it's not a great movie. That's what I got from it. It's not a great movie.
I could go my whole life having never watched it.
But are you better for that you did?
No. This movie didn't offer anything to me. There are other movies that do the themes that it tries to shoot for much better.
I mean, it's Beauty and the Beast, essentially in what, the '60s?
I mean, live Beauty, action, and Beast, Beauty and the Beast, Free Willy. You know, I'll let you. It just, I don't know.
No. Anyways, so do you recommend this one?
Nope, definitely not. I think you can go your whole life without watching it, and you'd be fine. And if someone is listening to this, and they, and I mean this, and they bought the romance, maybe they can clue me in as to why and how, because it did not work for me on any level, and it shot the movie down for me.
Yeah. I'm also not going to recommend it. And like we've talked about before, it's our recommendations have to mean something. So we, you know, while it's not a bad movie,
there are movies I like a whole lot more than this that I did not recommend.
Sure. Right. And so that's the thing, is that I don't think it's a bad movie. I think
I like the original I Got the Hookup more than this.
That's weird.
The Oscars fucked up. You don't?
No,
first I Got the Hookup's good. You like it.
No. I can't go that far. I mean, okay. You got me questioning my rating ability here. But it's just, I feel almost, it's almost a disappointment. And that's not the correct word, honestly. But it's how I feel when I watch this movie. And it validated my feelings from the first one, and you know, talking it through, you actually shed some light on some themes that I really didn't pay attention to, as far as like the fish out of water goes, and how that's it was a metaphor for a lot of things here, but it still doesn't save the movie for me. It doesn't make me reconsider my stance on it. It kind of validated how I felt about it, honestly, but. I'm not going to recommend it either. You can pass it. But anyways, Jeff, what are we watching next week?
Yeah, buddy, we're watching a perennial classic. Wasn't nominated for shit. That's not true. It was nominated for a Razzie for worst musical score. That being said, we're watching the John Carpenter classic from 1982, The Thing. Which I've never seen, and I think when Eric hears the fact that from my recording partner over on Chronologically, when he hears I haven't watched this before, he's going to be like, what the hell? Because he loves it. So I'm going to watch The Thing, and Mark's going to have to watch it as well.
Well, no, I saw it a long time ago. I haven't seen it in decades.
It's got Wilford Brimley in it.
The walrus himself.
The last time we saw Wilford Brimley, you remember what movie that was?
Yeah, it was the Van Damme.
Yeah, movie. Hard Target, baby. Yeah.
Hard Target, yep. this is kind of out of place. Talk about fish out of water.
Yeah.
I saw it a long time. I think last time I saw it, I was genuinely a kid.
Wow.
So I don't remember a whole lot about it. So I'm excited to watch it again and see if I don't have, I really don't have an opinion on it because it was so long ago. I don't really remember anything from the film. I just know that it's very well regarded in horror circles, and you know, it's a John Carpenter classic and whatever that means. But
it's directed by John Carpenter, and it's a classic. That's
all right. But we'll see about that. We'll see.
Shit is gonna be better than this shit. Plus, it's a horror movie, and we're in October, so leave it up to your boy. To take care of us this month.
The fucking creature in this upcoming movie better be good.
Let me tell you, I don't care one way or another. Just know this. In the month of October, I have certain expectations that we deliver on. And it doesn't come around but once a year. Like, we got three special events that happen on the Draft House calendar. And one of them to me is October being scary movies, our top five and bottom five at the end of the year. And then draft a theme in June. This is one of those big things for me. So
you remember our films last October?
Yeah.
It was Vampire Month. Yeah. We watched some crazy ass shit.
I was fine with that. That was a good month, I think. You picked that weird one. I can't beat off unless you tell me to. which is my favorite joke I've ever come up with. Anyway. So if you want more from Mark... You can find
him. Hold up. Okay, hold on. Listen, man, let me handle these.
I started to start the thing.
Listen, you want to find more Movie Draft House? We're on all your favorite social media platforms at Movie Draft House. We're on Twitter, we're on TikTok, we're on Instagram. Here on YouTube, where you're watching us right now, hit the subscribe button when it pops up so you don't miss any future content here. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter and tell him, hey, man, fish sex ain't so bad. Get at him at Podcast by Jeff.
All right. So listen up. You're going to want to know this. So in 2 weeks when we watch Lamb and afterwards, you want to get in touch with Mark and be like, bitch, you really fucked up Spooky Month. You can get in touch with him on Twitter at I Heard You Liked. Also, you can check out my other podcast, Chronologically, where right now we're going through all of M. Night Shyamalan's filmography in chronological order. Just find us in your favorite podcast app.
Yeah. I really think you're going to like Lamb. I do.
It's made by who? Who published it? Who was
A24.
That? A24. Yeah, that's right. It's going to be hot garbage. How many A24 movies have I seen? I've seen...
I don't know.
Hereditary didn't like that. Midsommar was hot garbage. Yeah. Men was garbage. What else have I watched?
You're already biased against this film.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And until...
Man.
Hey, I'll always point out the fact I was biased against Karate Kid. Watched that shit. Loved it. So despite my reservations, I will still give it a fair shake. But I cannot deny the fact when I see an A24 logo, I immediately roll my eyes.
Mm. Have you watched a trailer for Lamb?
Nope. I'm going to go in blind.
Okay. Good.
I don't watch trailers anymore. It's just a good way to... Well, that's not true. I watch trailers for movies I'm not sure if I want to watch. But movies I'm definitely going to watch, I'm not going to watch a trailer for.
Got it.
Spoilers,
noted.
Man. I did Knock on the Cabin, dude. First trailer looked great. Second trailer ruined one of the main plot points. Just gave it to you. And I was like, oh my God.
Y'all haven't watched that yet, have you?
No, I watched it before we started our season.
Okay.
Because I love M. Night Shyamalan. So.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, Jeff, you got any words of wisdom?
Not one. Have a good week, everyone.
Fall on.